Thanks.
The noise of gunfire rose from all over the centre of Peking. It was unremitting. On the streets leading down to the main road to Tiananmen Square, furious people stared in disbelief at the glow in the sky, listening to the sound of shots. Heading down the road was a hazardous business, but hundreds of people cheered as buses were set alight and army trucks caught fire too. They yelled and shouted, and then as troop lorries were seen moving down the road, there was gunfire from those lorries. The bicycle rickshaw scooped up the injured. Others were shunted onto bikes and pedaled to hospital. Many were carried away by frantic local residents. There was confusion and despair among those who could hardly credit that their own army was firing wildly at them.
The BBC's Kate Adie there reporting from Beijing 25 years ago this week. Images from the Tiananmen Square massacre, in which Chinese troops moved in on student protesters, killing at least hundreds, if not thousands, shocked the world. The exact fatality figures are still unknown. My next guest, Aidan Walsh, remembers the scenes well. He's the founder of Nace-based Texacloth, a wool exporter whose business has brought him back and forth to China numerous times in the past 30 years. Aidan, you were in China at the time because of your business. What do you recall of it?
Well, I was there because it was actually at the beginning of our wool season, which would have coincided end of May, beginning of June, and I used to go there every year. And that particular year, it was like carnival atmosphere when I arrived there. Students had all the streets on bicycles with their bandanas, and it looked forever like, you know, it was a big carnival. And my first reaction was, it's going to take us forever to get around to go to, you know, in taxis and stuff like that, which it did. But I would have had also at that time fairly close contact with the embassy. I would drop into the embassy sort of all the time and tell them what was happening and stuff like that. And they were much more concerned about what was happening than most of us who were just arrived there and just going to do our meetings and do our business. And we were in hotels and just, as I say, the carnival atmosphere was the thing that struck me. Anyway, they advised us that it was probably better to get your business done and move on for fear that anything might happen in the future, and you don't want to be hanging about. This could get nasty rather than, you know, continue as a carnival. So they obviously had more intelligence about what was possible and whatever. But
visually, at that time, when you say it was a carnival, there were no sign of soldiers.
No,
there was no tension.
No. Well, there's always soldiers in China. I mean, there's always, you know, if you go to Tiananmen Square any time, or to any of the, you know, Forbidden City or the Ming Tombs, there's always a presence of security. You know, I mean, in any time, it's always been like that.
So you got on a plane and you went home.
Yeah, I actually stopped off in Hong Kong, and it was starting to, you know, boil over. And I remember leaving there, and by the time I got home, I still can see Kate Adie on the street. And I'm thinking, that's not the place I was. Can't believe that's the place I was.
You were back in Nace or in Dublin at that stage,
right? Back
you?
In Nace, yeah, with the tanks and stuff, and I just couldn't believe it. You know, it was, and I mean, I rang some friends that I would have been sort of, you know, personal friends and stuff like that, and they said that what you see is real.
Yeah. Now, you've been in the wool business for a very long time. When did you first start going to China?
I went out there in 1980. Was the first time I went. They'd only just opened up to allow anybody in, and funny, to get there then was nearly a 2 days operation because, of course, they didn't allow airlines other than British Airways and Air China. So you had to find your way from Heathrow, as it was with me, to Hong Kong, and then whatever flight was suitable to get into Beijing. And I have to say, when I arrived, I just wanted to turn around and come back because
why?
It was, you know, you had all these people with machine guns, army with machine guns surrounding the plane, and none of the facilities that are evident now in Beijing or in any airport. It would be very much looked like a military airport. And then, of course, when you got to the customs, you're talking about 4 or 5 hours. Everybody was gone through with a fine-tooth comb. So I honestly thought during that 4 or 5 hours waiting that I was only going to go to the British Airways desk and go back out again. But, you know...
But you stuck
come
with
that, yeah, we've come that far. I said, what the hell was it, you know?
There weren't many Westerners and Irish people in particular doing business there in 1980, I'd imagine.
No, but the funny thing about it is of the few foreigners that were there, there was always a paddy that if you went to Charlie's Bar in the Jingwa Hotel, what was then the one hotel in Beijing for foreigners, invariably you'd find an Irishman. Yeah, there weren't many people there, no.
What about the food? Were you worried about what you'd eat or getting sick, or it must have been all very different?
Yeah, the biggest thing to help you with the food was the Moutai. When you eat something you didn't like, just get a glass of Moutai. So the consequences were you didn't have a sick tummy, but you had a sore head.
Right.
And that's for sure the next day. I can recommend anybody going there, whatever you do, keep away from the Moutai.
What about Ireland's relationship with China? Back in the day when you arrived in 1980, had anyone ever heard of Ireland?
Oh, well, you see, that was they were able to tell me things about Ireland that I didn't know. I don't know if you or anybody else knows that Frank Aitken, when he was Minister for Foreign Affairs, he proposed China, I think it was for the United Nations, to be members of the United Nations. And we also opened the embassy, Chinese embassy here, much to the annoyance of our near neighbours across the water, who objected strongly to that happening. The Chinese considered that we were very friendly to China because we did that. And I've often suspected was it because we were trying to get up the nose of our neighbours across the water that we wanted to
but
do things like that.
There may have been a benefit to maybe
but
people like yourself arriving fresh off the plane.
There is undoubtedly a friendship to the Irish. There's no doubt about that. There is a genuine friendship. So, yeah, I mean, there is a big, big thing for Ireland and China. I mean, we are pushing a fairly easy door to open if we have the right product. And they're asking me all the time for different things.
What about China today? You still do a lot of business in China. How much has it changed? It's dramatic.
Just, yeah, it is so dramatic that you couldn't describe it. Everything about China is different now. Everything. I mean, even the provinces. Even you go out in the provinces, it has changed.
When you look at all of that change and all of that economic development, there are lots of positives there for China, for Chinese people. Is it all positive? Do you think some things are
for
not
the Chinese
good?
People? I think it's all positive for the Chinese people.
Is there not a sense that a lot of people are maybe getting left behind as well? They're migrating to cities, hoping for a better life, and it doesn't always pan
there
out that way.
It's not apparent to anything like the extent that when I went there first, everybody was poor, everybody was sad, everybody. Now, there may be, of course, like everywhere, there may be people who are deprived, but it's not nearly as apparent. Not nearly as apparent. It's much more apparent to me, and now it's 2 years since I've been there. I'm due to go again in September, having said that I'm never going again after, I think, 81 visits now.
81 visits.
I think it's 81 at this stage, but now, I'm only yesterday, I think I'm going back again for what they call the Nanjing Fair. But no, I would have to say in the Chinese favour that they have done remarkably well and they're not leaving everybody behind.
When you look at China today, despite all of the economic progress and change they've had, politically it's still a very quite oppressive, secret kind of society. People don't talk about politics or Tiananmen Square, do they?
No, people don't. I would have had very, very few conversations with anybody in China about Tiananmen Square. They tend not to speak about it.
Why not? Fear? Uncomfortable?
I don't know. I suppose they'd probably feel a bit uncomfortable about it. But I, on the other side, would have felt uncomfortable about bringing up subjects of, you know, human rights or whatever, or political upheaval with them, while at the same time things that were going on in this country weren't exactly what I was proud of. So you tended not to, you know, if they wanted to speak to you about it. I have some friends that, you know, would have spoken vaguely about it. But you get a feeling of that they respect what their governments have done over the years to get the country to where it is now. Because nowadays China is most certainly very capitalist in its ways, while its workforce, they operate under the communist system. So it's definitely a two-track system.
But in order to have those two systems working side by side, the government has to be all pervasive and very much in charge. There's a big brother element to society.
Richard, to do that, and I mean, only very recently, I've seen, through my time, I've seen the hotels all having their big nightclubs, 3,000, 4,000 people in them, overnight closed. Recently, they have closed down all the karaoke clubs or houses.
Why?
This is where the new wealthy, would go in the evening at 6 o'clock, 6:30, have a big sumptuous meal, and suddenly the new premier said, right, that's out, because you guys are spending in one night what somebody's earning in a year. And that's very much to let the general masses see that we've done this.
But the business executive elite there and the political class, they enjoy a lot of affluence and benefits, don't they? They know how to spend it too.
You know, we've been involved with quite a lot of people that have come back and forth. And I mean, as you know, there are a lot of people buying serious properties in Ireland from China, and in other parts of the world, all over the world, in Singapore, in London. And I don't know whether, I suspect it's good investments to see that the markets are cheaper and good investments. I don't ever find any great desire by anybody who wanted to leave China. Whereas when I went there first, I was proposed marriage, I think, nearly everywhere I went, because you would meet somebody on the street and they'd say, you marry me, I come to your country. I mean, it was, everybody wanted to get out.
Did you turn them all down, Aidan?
I did see some other experiences there of people getting, you know, turfed out of the country and stuff like that, because it was, at the beginning it was a place you didn't speak too much to anybody. But you certainly didn't speak to the people in the hotels or become other than just purely business with them, because that was everywhere you went, there was people, security people on your back, you know.
Where do you see China going? Where do you think it'll be in 10 or 15 years' time?
I have absolutely no doubt that they will be the leaders of the pack. I have no doubt. I mean, they're very driven people, very determined people, very driven people. And they're going to have, I can see that they're going to have some of the troubles that we've all seen, because everybody wants to have an apartment now. Everybody wants to have a car, and everybody wants to have designer gear. And needless to say, you have parts of Shanghai where an apartment could cost you $3 million. Now that's sort of gets, doesn't it sound like other places that we've...
So you think there might be a bit of a property bubble?
I think there could be, yes. If not, perhaps they, of all the people in the world, might know how to manage it. Because I, maybe more than some people, but I would have great faith in their ability to take the right decisions at the right times. I mean, at the end of the day, they're the people who are actually going to the safe and handing out the money to the rest of us. If they called in all their debts, we'd all be in trouble.
What about those who'd say, economically, there's a huge opportunity in China, but we should at the same time be cautious and take account of the fact that, you know, it is an authoritarian one-party system, not a great record on human rights, and we shouldn't necessarily be all embracing of everything to do with China for financial reasons?
Yeah, well, I would say to people who say that, when you have your own house in order, start knocking on somebody else's door to get theirs in order. I think we have a lot of things we could sort out in our own country. And over the years, we've been slow to sort out a lot of issues. I mean, one of the headlines in the paper that I saw yesterday would frighten you about what was going on in Ireland. So I think we're a little bit holier than thou in that. You know, I'd be tongue in cheek now about telling the Chinese how to run their business or how to run their human rights. I know that there are issues there, but tell me where there are no issues.
What about your own business and the shape of that business now? You buy and source wool in where and sell it to where?
Basically, obviously we're an Irish company, so we buy wool in Ireland, but we would buy a lot more wool in the United Kingdom now, Scotland, Wales and England. And I've just come back yesterday from Serbia. We're buying wool in Serbia, Estonia, Latvia. And to me, that looks like that's going to expand maybe into Germany, maybe into America next
year. And are you
year.
Selling all of that to China mainly? And
pretty well all of the wool is going to China. We do.
How much wool would you sell
India
in a year?
As well. I suppose in the year which is starting now, our season starts just now, I suppose we could probably sell as much as 10,000 tonnes of wool.
What does that mean in money terms, Aidan?
I mean, it could very easily be sort of, you know, $20 million. It's not big stuff in, you know, in huge businesses, but in a nice family business that runs along, because we're pretty well all family.
So it's like a brokerage that you have now, in a sense. You're sourcing wool, buying it in different places,
getting
and selling
what they
it
want
mainly to China.
And get what they want for them. We do process some. We do wash some for them. You know, it's. I mean, we're not a huge business, but we're just a nice family business that runs along quietly under the radar and minds our own business.
Do you still enjoy business?
Ah, sure. I wouldn't be able to live without it. I mean, you know, there's a thrill every day you get up and buy and sell. You know, that's...
You obviously still have a big appetite for the business. You enjoy it as much as you probably did 20 or 30 years ago. Do you plan to retire anytime soon, Aidan?
No, not on the agenda. And I say to anybody who has, who considers that they have the good luck of being able to retire and live sort of, you know, quietly, I can't see. I think that would drive you mad.
What age are you now?
66.
And you'd like another...
No, if I get to 76 or 86, all I would like to be is to have control of my faculties, and I will keep doing business until then. As soon as I go gaga, well, that's the end of that.
Would you be worried about putting your feet up and just being bored?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, totally worried. And, oh, God, I think you just go to seed. Yeah, I think so.
Well, Aidan...
Try and keep fit and try and keep a few quid in your pocket.
Well, Aidan, I've no doubt you'll do that. Thanks very much for joining us on the programme. Aidan Walsh.
Thank you. Thank you.
RTE Radio 1.
The Business on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Electric Ireland, Ireland's leading business electricity provider.